Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Detroit-based jazz pianist Michael Karloff on Anthony Davis's Malcolm X opera. After lying dormant for 36 years following its New York City opera premiere, X was recently resurrected with performances by the Detroit Opera and BMOP, to be followed nationwide by Opera Omaha, Seattle Opera, Lyric Opera of Chicago, and the Metropolitan Opera in New York for the 2023-24 season. According to composer Anthony Davis, the winner of the 2020 Pulitzer Prize for Music for the Central Park Five, there is no better time than now to revive X. Michael talks about his full involvement in this project and so much more. Enjoy.
Michael, thank you for taking a minute out. I appreciate it.
No, this is a pleasure for me. I was so happy to be part of Malcolm X when it premiered in Detroit last spring, so I'm always happy to talk about my experience with it.
So I guess that's the beginning place for this. Talk to me a little bit about how you got involved in this project.
I'm known in the Detroit area as somebody who's equally comfortable playing symphony pops concerts, classical concerts as a collaborative pianist, music theater stuff, and jazz gigs. I swim in a lot of circles in this area, and I have people at the Detroit Symphony who know me and hire me for pops work. I'm playing an ABBA show next week. I played a Prohibition 1920s era show last week, and I go out on tour with a jazz clarinetist in the area, Dave Bennett. So when the opera needed somebody who could be their rehearsal pianist as well as play the shows, my name came up as somebody who did that sort of thing and could swim in all of those arenas as the rehearsal accompanist. Of course, you're reading off the score, but this score in particular has lots of sections where you're reading what would look like a jazz chart with chord changes and instructions to improvise like McCoy Tyner or improvise like Cecil Taylor, or a section in Act One where it's like a Duke Ellington version of stride piano. So it needed somebody who could, approach the music from lots of different angles, both written notation as well as improvising and reading chord symbols and imitating some great jazz pianists.
So I think doing something at this particular time on Malcolm X may have a little bit more of a different weight with what we've been living through, especially during COVID and things getting more magnified. Was there a more special significance to presenting this during this modern era we're living through right now with everything going and doing what it's doing?
That's an interesting question. I to be perfectly honest, hadn't thought about that a whole lot, the significance per se of Malcolm X in this era. I was happy to say that Detroit Opera saw an outstanding turnout. It was a sold-out audience for the final performance. Detroit Opera hadn't seen a sold-out show in, I think, about 10 years. So not only was that just a sign of the significance of the work to the Detroit area, but also, I think, a very enthusiastic audience that was ready after a year and a half to get out and see things like opera again. So I think everybody there was just so happy to see audiences again and to have people turn out. And again, I think it was both the significance of Malcolm X as a historical figure in his connection to the Detroit area in many ways, as well as the post-COVID enthusiasm and support for performing arts.
Whenever you have the term project on something, there is automatically a denotation that there's a lot of people involved in this. What was this like from a collaborative standpoint, to not only the inception, but getting ready for the show and to actually do it and have this recording? What was the alpha and omega like for this project for you as a collaborative unit doing this?
So I was involved in both the production in Detroit, and then, as you know, I was then in Boston to be part of the recording process. And both of those experiences for me were outstanding opportunities personally and professionally to collaborate with a director who had been working on Broadway on a number of projects in New York, a choreographer who had been a part of Hamilton, a musical director, conductor who'd been conducting operas in Germany. It was just a real thrill to be in the room with all of these different artists and what they individually bring to the table. And you're absolutely right, especially in Detroit, Anthony Davis was there, the composer, giving his own input and musical direction and in clarifying both the text as well as some of the musical concepts for all of us. And it was, I think, a really beautiful collaboration that I was a part of in Detroit. And likewise, in Boston for the recording, Gil Rose brings such a vast wealth of musicality, and he knows modern writing and composition so well that he was so comfortable within the melodic and harmonic vocabulary and rhythmic vocabulary of the work, which is very complicated. And Gil was, in the Boston Modern Orchestra project, was without a doubt the group to record this work in all its complexity. The musicians, and under Gil's direction, were outstanding and really, I think, did the piece true honor and justice.
So for the sake of the fact that we're a jazz show, go back in your life, tell me when and how you fell in love with jazz, whether it was a recording or a live show.
I was a teenager when I discovered jazz music. I was a very young student of piano. I started when I was 3 years old, and I was, you know, playing my Beethoven and Mozart and Chopin, and I knew that world very well by the time I was 13, 14 years old. And I was, at that time, playing trumpet in a marching band, and the marching band leader decided to start a jazz combo rehearsal after the marching band practice, and we were, you know, playing just some teenagers and jazz standards, but the whole idea of finding that freedom and improvisation and a collaboration and spontaneity of the music just lit a fire in me. And by the time I was 15 years old, I think I was maybe had a little bit of an attitude, but I was like, I want to do jazz and forget classical music. And now I came around in my 20s and found an appreciation and continued to foster my classical abilities as well. But I pursued jazz music for an undergrad and master's degree. And as I said, I've lived in both worlds very happily since, but I was a teenager when I found jazz, and I've been in love with it ever since.
You know, the one thing about this last couple of years, and I kind of touched on it with asking about, you know, doing this piece in Malcolm X, is that, you know, we were away for 2 years. It really jolted the entertainment world, especially musicians. I'm curious with you, like, you saw this production firsthand live, but just in general, how do you see the world of music? I mean, you see it from a classical and jazz perspective. How do you see that world coming back to life and being stronger than it ever was before?
Well, I'm seeing it firsthand. I can speak to an experience I'm going through right now where in my career, I often music direct theater shows locally, and I've never had a harder time booking a band for a show I have coming up in December. I need musicians for 2 weeks of work, and I keep hitting brick walls. Every time I call a musician, it's like, thank you for the offer, but I've got lots of gigs. All my friends are working, and I think it's a sign that people realize what they've missed and have a newfound, or maybe not newfound, but a renewed appreciation for the role that music plays in society, in our world, in our lives, and I think it's great. Although I'm having a hard time booking musicians, I'll keep making the phone calls, and I'll book this band eventually, but it seems like everybody I know in my circle is, quite busy, and that's a good thing.
What's next for this project? What's coming up? Where does this project go?
Well, as far as I'm aware, it is currently in Omaha, and I was very graciously offered to be the rehearsal accompanist and or the performance pianist in Omaha, but unfortunately with my other work, I couldn't make myself available. I'm really disappointed because I would have loved to have continued to be a part of it in that inception. From Omaha, I know it goes to the Lyric Opera of Chicago. I believe it will end up at the Met around this time next year, and do forgive me if I've left one out, but in my vague understanding, I think those are the upcoming destinations for it.
Well, I guess to patch up any of those dots here, I'm going to ask you this. Where's the best place for those out there listening to find out about the itinerary online or pick up this recording?
I'll be perfectly honest with you. I might not be the best person to ask, but if you need an audio bite of me saying so much, I don't know honestly if how BMOP distributes their recordings. I will say that if you are in the Omaha area in the next week or so, there are performances at Opera Omaha, and do check out the Lyric Opera of Chicago website for upcoming performances, as well as the Met. There's a lot of press. In fact, if you just Google Malcolm X Opera, you'll land on many articles that's been talking about this production and this show, and there seems to be a lot of enthusiasm around it. So I'm sure we'll be hearing lots about it.
Absolutely. Perfect. Michael, thank you for taking some time out today. I appreciate it. Good luck with everything.
No, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview. We give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Detroit, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Michael for his time, energy, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.